So I have to make a public apology. It's
I've been
kind of
waiting for
big.
this. I'm ready. I'm ready
I
to
can't
hear.
wait for the thumbnail
Okay,
for this.
I'm really anxious to hear what Jimmy thinks this is going to be because he was not here when I mentioned it before. Oh, I know. So we have a Patreon supporter who has been in the group of the people, the names that I call out in the show. There's a bunch of people that are in the show notes, and then there's the top supporters that are in the show that I always like say their name every time. It's a list of people, and they've been around for a long time. There's a guy who's been in that list for a long time, 30
a long
years,
time.
15, 30 years.
And for some reason, for some reason, I thought he was in the list of people that are just have their name in there, and so I haven't been saying his name this entire time. And so I owed a huge apology to Nick Ryan because Nick Ryan should have been in that list of people that I call out.
Of
And he's in the
course.
list now. And I'm going to make sure that I call out his name
Oh, Nick's
every
been. Nick
time.
was at my very first class that we ever did, and then in
Oh.
four of three or four after that, until he started having a family. But yeah, mad
Well,
love to Nick.
not only has Nick been supporting us for a long time, but he actually has not called me out for not saying his name, which is equally
Thank
cool. So thank you, Nick.
you, Nick.
But I am sorry for that. We also added a new Patreon supporter. So this guy's getting the call out for the first time, you know, like you're supposed to. Matthias Garnau. Garnau?
Ah,
Garnau. You know
another.
Matthias?
Yes.
Oh,
He's
okay.
a fan.
Well,
He buys a lot of my stuff, so thank you,
that's
Matisse.
awesome. Well, he has joined that crew as well. So, Nick, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, times the number of times that I did not say thank you for being here. As well as Matthias. Since we're here, I'm going to go ahead and thank the rest of them. Corey Ward, Albers Woodworks, Works by Solo, Chad from Mancrafting, Chad's Custom Creations, Rich at Low End Design, Odin Leather Goods, Sean Beckner, Scott at Daddy Yourself DIY, Jeff at the New Janky Workshop, Warren Works, Michael Menegin, and Crabtree Creative.
It's the
They're
shortest
the.
episode we ever did right now.
That's right. That is the list of people that I should say every time to thank out loud for their overwhelming and continued support. You all are fantastic. So
Thank
thank you
you.
all.
You are putting us in a weird position. Now we don't have time to find our picks of the week because usually that's the time where we scramble and go through our history.
Yeah, you
Well,
hit
tell you
us
what, I'll
hard.
give you about an hour from
Okay.
now to
Okay.
figure it out.
Some
And
silence playing on a phone.
yeah, we'll talk about something else for the hour while everybody figures it out. Myself included, because I don't have a pick as well. But seriously, thank you to everybody over at Patreon. David and I, before we started recording, we're talking about Patreon and how it's just one of those things that, you know, sometimes we on our individual channels we talk about it a lot, sometimes we don't, but it's a consistent support, you know, people that just want to be around and want to help out what we're doing both here and individually, and it's awesome. So thank you all for that.
There
If you want to join that and get the after show, which is separate podcast that like you go to patreon.com/makingit, sign up at any level, and then in Patreon there's a link. You take that link, you put it in your podcast player, and then you get the after show, which is a separate thing that we record after this. It's secret stuff and goofy stuff and
you.
you know, stuff.
I'll wait till the after show to tell everybody the expensive thing I just committed to buying.
Oh,
I said that before we started, right? Yes, I did.
You did.
It's coming today.
Jimmy has a cutoff of $100,000. Anything under $100,000, he talks about on the main show.
Yikes.
Oh,
Yeah.
boy.
Well, since you
Want to
can't tell
talk
us about that, what
about?
else is going on? What have you been doing?
Well, I am getting something that I didn't buy, but it's going to be a trade out for exposure. I'm getting a sawmill. If you guys remember
That's
Log
cool.
Sol is the sawmill that April had a couple of years ago. So they finally realized that I exist, thanks to Laura Comp. And they reached out to me. Laura was working with them on some product promotion, and she suggested they call me. And so we started a conversation months and months and months ago, maybe the beginning of the summer. And now here it is. The sawmill's going to be dropped off today. It's been a long, arduous journey from Sweden to here, and then missed the port strike. There's a northeast port strike, which means everything that comes in on an ocean liner or ocean ship sits still.
Oh.
So we missed the port strike by mere hours, thankfully.
Wow.
So it's on a truck. It's going to be delivered today, and that's good. because if it was sitting there, I'd probably never see it again, or I'd never see it. So it's coming today, so I'm excited about that. And this other large purchase was a consequence of getting a sawmill, which is something I've always wanted. And Rob and I always knew that.
I think you say a consequence. You had no choice.
I had no choice. I had to go out and buy this other thing. You guys will see it in time. And so I'm excited. The sawmill is going to go over at the graveyard house. Has a big giant piece of property and a barn. So it's going to go right beside the barn. So anything we cut will go inside there. And I've been obviously watching some videos on how to use a sawmill, what to do, how to do. It's exciting. And my leather shop, which is the upstairs of the horse barn. I'll say this right now, once and for all time, I'm never going to bring it up again.
Oh.
I don't care if there's horse poopy smell in the upstairs of my barn. I don't care. There most likely we never will be horse poopy smell in my barn, because I'm most likely never going to have a horse in it. But I'm making it as a horse barn so that if I ever sell the property, I could put it in the listing that house includes a horse barn. I don't want to awkwardly say it was going to be a horse barn, but I changed it, but you could change it back. So I'm going to make it a horse barn. There's so many people go, what about the smell? They'll like pull me to the side. They'll be like, you know, horses poop. So if you have the thing upstairs, like what's going to happen?
Wait a minute. Question. Horses poop?
I heard this. Everybody says this to me. They're like, I don't really understand how you're going to withstand the smell of horse poop upstairs. So there's never going to be horses in the horse barn.
I also think that people who have horse, I don't know. I'm not a horse person or a centaur, either one. But people who have horses, I think, don't really care so much about the smell of having horses, all of the different parts of having horses, because they're kind of used to it, right?
Yeah, of course.
I mean.
Yeah. I don't like horse poop smell. I'm going to just say that.
But that's why you don't have horses in your house.
That is correct. Yes.
I mean, that's probably one of the reasons. But
The leather studio is really basically, I would say for now, it's ready to go. And the other day, it was such a pleasure to go up there. And my sewing machines are up there. Most of the supplies are up there. All my doodads tools, the new chest that I made, that's up there with full 48 drawers. Couches, chairs. I put a bed up there in preparation for. It's like a day bed, but it's a bed. It's have as an extra bedroom in case somebody wants to stay up there. The heat and the plumbing isn't turned on, but going into the winter, we're going to start working on that. It's just such a beautiful. Clean space. That's what I'm calling it, my clean space. Because all my shops that I have are all dirty and grungy with grinding and sawdust and whatnot. So anytime I had to go use a sewing machine, I tried this routine of covering it up with a tarp. But you know, if you had to cover a sewing machine, it's a pain in the butt because you have the big thing that holds the sewing spools. That's always so. I never got into the habit of cleanly covering my sewing machines. But now they're in a clean room. So the other day I had to whip out something and I just went, boop, scissors, fabric, no sawdust, no moving ladders, no moving machines. Everything's in its place. Everything's clean. Yes.
Two things. One, making a cover for the sewing machine that fits specifically that pointy part and all the weird parts would actually be really cool to see how you did that.
Oh, it's
project
interesting.
Idea.
Yeah, interesting.
You're welcome. Idea. The other one is we've been talking about the... You know, the upper floor of this thing the whole time, and you've probably told us this, and I just have forgotten. And that sounds like an awesome space, but what are you going to do at the bottom with all the, like, stall areas? What's the plan?
Oh, okay, that's a good question. Storage at the moment. I'm going to develop a pottery studio in one of the spaces, a dedicated pottery studio.
That's right, yeah.
So I made sure we have a plug, and I have, underneath the stairwell, I dedicated the space for the kiln. I made a set of wheels, so I'll pull the kiln out when I need it. If I'm not using it, it'll tuck into the under the stairwell. And so first thing off the top of my head is the pottery, but certainly storage. I have a tractor. I'm going to pull a tractor in there. I have an old tractor that needs to be maintenance. Then I got to take the engine apart. So I was going to do that. So I have this extra space. I was going to dedicate it to a couple of restoration projects. Just cool. Under the cover of weather.
Have you thought about horses?
I ordered a horse from Amazon. It's going to be here in a couple of weeks. Yep.
Yeah.
The non-pooping kind.
It's stuck in the port strike. It's like on a. Yeah.
No, it's just more storage. My lawnmower, believe it or not, with all the space I have in the lawnmower, sat outside since I got it new. So now I park it inside. I have a zero turn lawnmower. I bring it inside. And I have more coverage now, so more of the things that just get eaten by the weather are now in, undercover. And that's it. There's a lot more to do. There's a lot more plumbing and in-floor heating and all that to sort out. Oh, and the biggest thing, I don't know if I might have mentioned it, that David the Mexican Carpenter and Kyle from R&R Builders came with LP siding inside of the place. I told you guys. Did I say that last week? I don't remember.
Yeah.
Because they were just finishing up this time last week. And the place just looks amazing. Every time I walk out into the backyard and I round the corner and I see it, I just can't believe that is here. It's almost like a spaceship landed in my yard and it's mine to keep. It's unbelievable. I mean, blood, sweat, and tears, quite literally, to get to where we are right now. And it's been crazy. I mean, the thing represents a lot of weird emotions for me, but I'm happy that it's not sitting there undone.
Yeah.
It's to some extent, it's closed to the weather. It's completed from the exterior. The interior needs some work. But what a struggle. What a struggle. And when I very first bought this house, I bought the house with an ex-girlfriend, but we soon split. So the house is mine alone for many, many years. And it was one of the visions. I even have a wooden model that represents what I would have wanted in the backyard. But it was just it's a post and beam barn that I made a model of, but with a gambrel roof versus a straight sided roof. So that's the only difference. But it's been a vision 20 years. Last week marks the 20th anniversary since I've owned this house. And in a month, the end of this month marks the 10-year anniversary that we've been doing this podcast. So it just blows my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I closed on this house September 24th, 2004. Not even knowing why I bought a house. So a lot of people think I started the YouTube channel, became rich, and bought a house. But I had the house for 10 years.
You were rich before the YouTube channel.
Yeah. I was rich right before. No, I bought this house, and it was a very depressed area. The houses up here were basically, they were giving them away. They pay you to take them so they get you on the tax roll. Well, the houses up here were very, very cheap when I bought this house. And the neighborhood has obviously grown, especially since COVID, and everyone from New York fled and came up north. But in general, I'm just really happy that I've gotten this accomplishment. And I couldn't have done it without you in the audience. So thank you, guys. I'm half kidding. But no, I really, you know, my life changed when I got on YouTube and met this community. And I was able to finally save money and, you know, just really love what I do. So this is just a consequence of all that. You know, the buildings in the backyard really came together because of this community. Kyle and David built the first building, and Kyle and David helped me button up the second building. So it was really nice for them to be back here for that beautiful moment. I'm going to do a barn update video coming soon. And if what I'm up to, my chest of drawers is doing very well. Finally have a video that's doing well for the first time probably this year, which is nice. Good. So thank you everybody for watching that. And I'm working on another episode of The Graveyard House, and I'll include some of the little tidbits of the barn update incoming in that. So that's what I'm working on. I'm working on an edit for the episode 7 of the barn build of the Graveyard House. We'll install a floor and get prepped the chimney to get some veneer and just more ripping out rot and putting in clean wood. A lot more of that.
Nice. That's cool. David, what have you been up to?
So this week, the bed video's not out yet. Still waiting on approval from the sponsor, so it could be out anytime. And then this week we started a Goodwill project. We found these plastic storage crates, two of them, and I am taking the drawers out of them and then making like a new wooden case. I've done this something somewhat similar a couple years ago. I'm trying to get a little bit more crazy and wild with the design this time. And it's really hard to explain, so I'm not going to go into too many details. But there's six plastic drawers that I kept. And then I built two different cases, two different carcasses. And then those that hold three drawers each. And then I'm going to cut each one of those, the completed cases, in a weird angle and then combine the two. So there's going to be all these crazy, weird, funky shapes. And I think it's coming out really cool. A lot of small, repetitive peacemaking for this. Because each little drawer is basically in its own little box, and then three boxes were combined, and another three boxes were combined, and then now the six boxes will get combined in a weird, weird shape. So that is what I'm working on. I've done the Goodwill thing a few times. I really, the funny thing is, this would be a cool project if I just made it, if I just designed the thing and made the drawers. But I never would have made this particular design without the limitations of trying to fit it to some other drawers being made. So that's the challenge of that. And it's been fun. I like taking old things and making them new.
Yeah. You do that a lot.
I do that a lot.
Sense that you were like, it is cool.
Sometimes it works on YouTube and sometimes it doesn't. I haven't found like the magic packaging formula to make it always work, but they're always super fun for me. I just absolutely love doing it.
I wonder if, so like you've done that type of thing around synthesizers a few times.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then is there any other kind of genre of item that you've done it around multiple times?
I don't think so. It's funny, I got more synthesizer stuff that I want to do upcoming. I don't think so, because it's like I just love synthesizers. I'll grab this.
Well, yeah, and that's awesome. I think that's actually a good my point in asking that question is that you have a skill for taking things, just different things, mm-hmm. and packaging them, repackaging them in a way that is your aesthetic. It's like you're good at removing and replacing around a thing generically. You've done that a few times with synthesizers, but then other kind of disconnected things. But I wonder if you said you didn't know how to make this, or how, I don't remember how you said it, something about this working on YouTube.
Right.
I think that if you took your skill set and this thing that you like to do to a particular area and like did a whole bunch of game consoles or a mm-hmm. whole bunch of whatever, like you would grab that audience, the people that also love vintage, you know, blank.
Right. Yeah.
And get them interested in it, not just people who like woodworking or people who like the kind of broad. I don't know. It seems like you could do a focus there for a little while, maybe.
And that is exactly where I want the channel to go. Like, I mm. want to, you know, right now, there's a lot of woodworkers or people who like watching woodworking stuff that watch my channel. But I would like it to be more of, like, people who just want to see cool stuff being made or, like, I want to focus more on the art stuff and getting weird with my designs, and people, I want to attract that audience. And that's it's tough to shift from a woodworking audience to a more general, I don't even know if more general is the right phrase, but I'm looking to bring in other audiences, because I really have removed most of the how-to language from the videos over the last year or so. Like, there is very little like, oh, now I have to pre-drill the wood so it doesn't crack, and you know, I gotta do that. I've removed that language completely, and it's more about the why I'm doing something or telling a story in the background. And that's there are some people who have vocally said in the comments like they don't like this, which is totally cool. There are some videos like we talked about this before. The first day you see the subscriber count go down, like, oh, this video lost 16 subscribers. That's fantastic, because I'm pushing towards, I think, a different audience as I am growing. And there are some people who absolutely love it and make me feel really good about what I do. And I'm just in a lucky enough position to try to change and do something a little bit different.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, keep it up.
So I pulled this up. I bought another little MIDI controller just for, I want to build this iPad synthesizer studio. So it's kind of like a, think of it as like a mini arcade style. So it goes up like that. And recasing the MIDI keyboard controller and an iPad would slip into it with another musically thing. I'm not going to get into the details, device in there, but it's going to look like a little mini arcade. And I've had this plasma, the CNC plasma cutter for a year now, and I haven't used it in a video, and I've been waiting to do this. So I'm going to make it look like everything is kind of like rack mounted. So two screws fits into a frame, and I even got a metal brake bending device so I could do some this stuff. It's just a matter of I need to get started. I need to do it. But it always feels like I'm behind. It always feels like I'm behind on videos. And so I'm like rushing to like last minute to get more videos out for different obligations and stuff. And I need, instead of planning for this particular week of videos, I need to start planning for videos that are 3 or 4 weeks ahead. I need to get into that rhythm.
Do you have...
That's impossible. I can't do that.
It is really hard.
I mean, do you have a plan for how you might do that? I'm going to take notes if you do. So
I have concepts of a plan.
That's perfect.
No, I mean, I don't know. That is a tough thing to, because I'm constantly in that same spot as well. Do you have like any sort of a actual idea how to do that?
No, I really don't, except for I think I've said this for 10 years, I just need to get more organized and get caught up, which I don't think is ever going to happen. So I need to get past that mentally and just set aside time to work on future projects.
Yeah.
I don't do very well, at least not yet, at juggling multiple projects at one time. I really like focusing 100% of my energy on this particular thing, having that end, and then moving on to something else. That's my brain doesn't like to focus on two things, especially creatively.
Yeah, I think to actually do that in any way that's useful, I can't really mix them. So working on multiple things at the same time doesn't actually mean what it says. It's more like I spread out the work over a few days, but I have to do a little bit on this one and then kind of chop it off, switch gears, and then, you know, it's like segmenting them, not really multitasking them, I think. That's the only way I've been able to make progress. And still, even when I try to do that, I'll do that a little bit. And then, like, for example, I was talking about the pole storage thing and how I dedicated some time to modifying that design. I have not been back to that at all. And then something for it to work, for me to actually make progress on it, I have to put a little bit of time into it every couple of days, you know, to keep it up. But I haven't. So
when I have that itch for anything, I've talked about this 100 times. Whenever I have an itch, and I feel like my book report is getting neglected and the due date is coming. This is how I spent my entire school childhood, ignoring everything until the night before it was due. Every time I get that vibe and that feeling and I go through my to-do list and I'm like, oh, I get the about that one particular thing, I go and do a little bit of it so that I get rid of that. If I do a little bit of it, that goes away. And then I'm like, I'm always happier that I've confronted it and dealt with it. The big, for instance, is the edit for this next video. I have 2 hours worth of footage I'm looking at, and everything looks like it needs to be in the video. And last night, I just did that at 2 a.m., and I sat here, and I edited it for 30 minutes, and I got 2 hours down to 40 minutes, and I got a vibe and a story going. So I knew if I went to sleep with that in my mind, I'd wake up, and I'd be like, But that's just typical of... with a big to-do list. You got to get rid of that. Like right now, let me feel like if I say Karma Gia.
Ugh.
There it is. I knew I'd get that.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Speaking of Karma Gia, So I realized, hang on, I interrupted myself. I'm gonna say two separate things. One, I'm gonna talk about the Karmagia, but before that, I realized that if you're listening to this when it comes out, it's the wrong time. We realized that we recorded a show last week, but we forgot to tell Brandon that it was there, so he didn't know to edit it, so it didn't go out. So now we have two shows that are going to be a week off. And so the timing may seem a little bit weird, but mid-October, it'll all be good, so don't worry about it. Yeah. I put out a Carmen Ghia video, the one that we've been talking about, this last weekend. You want to take bets on how it did? Anybody?
I think I know.
Do you? How do you think it did?
Because I see your Instagram.
No, yeah. did very poorly. And it's not really surprising, but it's always a little disappointing. The Ghia videos just never really do super well. And I think there's several reasons for that. But anyway, the turnover in subscriber that you were talking about, this one dropped. I dropped like, I don't know. You can't see how many total people you lose, I don't think. But anyway, it dropped, and then now it is beginning to climb back up. And it's still in the negative, but it's still whatever. It's in the, like, under 20 people. It's not a big deal. This is not, like, I'm not complaining about that. But it was, I do see evidence of the thing that you're talking about. And I'm always reminded every time that, like, yeah, it's, we're switching over people. We're switching over old audience to current audience, which is fine because the people that are subscribing through this video liked the video enough to subscribe. But, you know, the video, like the Ghia videos are so much manual, repetitious labor that I usually use them as a way to make a point. So I'll find a topic, something I want to say, and then I'll kind of wrap it into what I'm doing, and you know, so that they try to have like a point to them. I want my content in general to be useful, not just from like a technical standpoint, but to make an impact, get somebody to think about something, whatever. And man, that some people that like is what they want, and they're like, oh, this is just what I needed. I don't really look at comments anymore, but occasionally I will glance at them. And this one's like, this is really what I needed. Thanks for the reminder. Thanks for the whatever. I love seeing the project. And the other ones are like, maybe you should shut up. Maybe you should not talk so much. You would get more done if you didn't talk so much. You know, it's a lot of that type of stuff. And then a lot of people, or at least a couple people, said, you know, I think your biggest problem, which is not what I asked for, by the way, the commenters, I think your biggest problem is that you overthink things. And that actually got me thinking, because of course I overthink.
Wait, don't overthink what you think.
I know. That made me pause for a second, because of course I overthink things.
Right.
I mean, if you've ever spoken to me or heard me, you know I overthink things. Like, that's not a new thing. I don't take that as an insult. But it's an interesting thing for a person, of any person, to tell someone else you have a problem because you think too much about something that you care about. And so the thing that kind of stood out to me in that comment was like, man, could you imagine going up to somebody in person and being like, I see that you really care about this thing that you're working on and you're thinking a lot about it and you're trying to figure out the best way to do it. You do that too much. Like, I don't know. It seems like a weird thing to point out as some sort of failure, or like, it's not a bad thing. I don't think it's a bad thing to be thoughtful. And I'm not taking offense to this. It just got me thinking about, like, how do I respond to people that are really into something that I'm not necessarily into, or I don't see the value in the trade-off in value for how much they put into something to what they're getting out of it. And I want to make sure that I don't respond to people that way. I think about my kids and the effort that they put into whatever they're working on, you know, the sports they're in, the music they're in, and whether I understand it or not, the amount of effort that they put into something, it like matters to them, and it's relative to how much they care about the thing. I don't know. It was an interesting realization to be like, I need to make sure that I am careful with how I value what other people do to them. Because I think that kind of, I don't know if that person meant anything by it or if they were just making a comment, whatever, it doesn't matter. But
in real life, in people life, I remember, I think this was just the world that I grew up in my environment, but I would find myself saying a negative thing anytime somebody mentioned something like, oh, you know, so-and-so got a new white car. Well, yeah, good luck keeping that thing clean. That's going to show all the dirt. And I just, I would always have this negative reaction of like, well, good luck with that because, and sometime in my adult life, I realized like, that's not cool, you know? And I think, and now I notice it in other people around me. And I think it's not, a lot of times it's not meant to be a place of negativity. It's just like, that's just how people react to things. And you got to recognize that within yourself and try to change that. And so I think I'm pretty good at not doing the negative thing anymore.
Yeah.
Or if I do, I'll think about it later. And I'm like, man, why did I say, and I overthink, and that person probably doesn't think anything of it, but I'll overthink the situation. Anytime I go out in public now, I'm like, man, I probably was talking too much, or I didn't talk enough, or I'd say, I could have said that better. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's that thing about being like, I've always thought of it as a contrarian. Yeah, and there are certain people in my life that just have a contrary view of everything. They find the negative, whether they're a negative person or not, they find that little, the thing that you're talking about, the little, like, some negative association that goes with the thing. And you can just as easily not do that. You can just as easily find the positive, like Jimmy always says, like, what if, you know, what if it all goes right? What is the good thing that is also there in that situation opposed to the negative thing that is potentially there in that situation? And
that's why that's a very frustrating thing
for me to be around people like that on a consistent
basis. Tell anybody your ideas. It goes back to just keep your mouth shut. This thing, I purchased this expensive thing I'll talk about in the after show, and it'll be full public by the time the show comes out anyway. But just to keep the joke going, when I told a couple people, they're like, oh, you can't buy that. You got to buy this. This is the man, that's the worst one ever. And well, financing. Blah. And I said, I'm just going to one day have it and be like, where'd you get that? Well, that's cool. Yeah. But leading up to it, my friend goes, did you buy yet? Because you got to buy this other brand. I'm going to save you so much money with the salesperson I know. I was like, the one people I can't stand in this world the most are salespeople that sell expensive things. I can't stand them. I can't stand them. And I even wrote to brands like Polaris. I'm like, how can I buy a Polaris without talking to a salesman? And it's not possible. You can't get something without having to talk to somebody that judges you from the absolute second you go, can I talk to you about this? How much is this? And then right away they're judging you. They're deciding whether you think you're worthy of even their credit report or their time and energy. And it's, I can't stand it. And you know, there's a whole world of salespeople and their methods. I think the biggest method of all salespeople is to be dismissive and annoying and just immediately dismissive. And it drives me crazy. The minute I walk into any showroom, I go, I take a car, we'll call you later. You know, it just drives me crazy. Just don't share with people. And because if you're on the fence about your thing, only share with people you really, 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 really have confidence in their opinion or you're comfortable talking to. As many as you ask a salesman or another person or somebody on the lot, if it's a car or something like that, you get so many varied opinions. Because there are the people like me that will make a snap decision for $75,000 in 8 minutes versus the person that will take 6 months to make that decision. And everything in between will literally lift your needle, throw you off your game, spin you around, confuse you. You have to decide where you are on that scale of, let's just get it, whatever. I'll get it by a bus tomorrow and life could be over. I might as well enjoy the next 24 hours versus the next 6 months of deciding, comparing, deciding where the best finance, you know, try and save a fraction of a point. I mean, you keep using this car example, but where do you live on that scale, and what are you willing to put up with versus like talking publicly about it and publicly to your friends or family?
I think there's another way to look at it. Like you can put up a wall and say, I'm not going to like share my ideas. I'm not going to ask for feedback. I'm not going to, you know, take opinions, so that I don't have to change my place on that scale that you're talking about. Or you can ground yourself. You can like work harder on buffering the opinions that come in and deciding how much of that input to take. And I think part of that, like part of being on YouTube, being public in any way whatsoever, is having to ground your feet and say, I'm not going to take every bit of input that comes in as gospel, as truth, as reality, because it's not. And so any comment that you get that is positive or negative is an opinion of an outside person, and you don't have to take all of it at the same value, right? As the same level of like weight on you. I mean, just like you telling people you want to buy this helicopter. Oops, sorry, I spilled it. And, you know, some people are going to say, that's a great idea. Some people are going to say, that's a terrible idea. And you don't have to you don't have to take both of those opinions as, like, people. You know.
I mean, there was a time where I would, and I'd be like,
sure.
But to be perfectly honest, I still sometimes get a little, like, residual anxiety. Like when somebody washes their hands and then they flick the water on you, like that, like, those drips of water. Like, when I talk to somebody and they're like, yeah, but financing and warranty. And I'm just like, shut up. I don't want to know about that. I just want to be an artist. I don't care about financing. I don't care about 60 months, 1%. Shut up. Stop flicking your goo on me.
But the reason I bring that up is like the difference is because I think it can be really easy to put up a wall that then you don't share stuff. You hold everything, because I've been there. I've done this. You get to a point here where you're so afraid of feedback and you're so afraid of having to deal with differing opinions about you and about your choices that you just keep it all in. And I don't think that's actually good for you to keep everything inside behind a walled garden. I think it's also not good to put everything out and to tell everybody about everything. And, you know, but I don't know. I think it can just be really easy to get more and more separated from the people around you because you are worried about having to deal with their opinions about
this
stuff.
This thing I'm buying, I could build a wall around the whole property. So thanks for giving me that idea.
There you go.
Okay. You wall up my driveway entrance.
Garden then.
Yeah. I gotta always be so careful, like when I'm casually, and someone's like, hey, what's going on? I'm like, oh, nothing. Hey, what about, did you have, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm thinking about, financing, salespeople, best buyers, and you gotta go right to the Canadian borderline. That's the best deal. I'm like, yeah, then what happens when it breaks? Oh, you gotta go back to the Canadian borderline to get it serviced. I'm like, no. I remember, like, when I was looking
at a
truck.
If you buy the helicopter as well, then you can fly to Canada very easily. So it's not a big deal. Come on,
man. Here's an example. When I was looking to buy a new truck, this is 15, 20 years ago when I bought it. The first brand new truck I bought was a Toyota when I did my very first TV show. And I bought it from Hollywood Toyota. And I was like, you know what? All it is a payment. So I bought a brand new Toyota Tundra in 2004, the same year I bought this house. And then when it was a few years later, I was trying to buy a Chevy. I was like, I want to get a Chevy truck. Casually mentioned to my father, oh, you got to go. My friend in South Jersey owns a dealer. You got to go to him. I'm like, South Jersey is completely out of my circle of activity. I'm going to go to the dealer that's 5 miles from my house. I don't care if I have to pay more because the difference is going to be made up in going to South Jersey to sign documents and dealing with people in South Jersey. I'm going to save $3,000 on the price. When people give you a deal on a car, it's not a deal, especially when you're buying something new. They have a buffer. You either pay this much or that much. And all it ever really adds up to is $5 or $10 more in the payment. You never like walk it out of there with a pocket with $4,000 in the pocket. They literally just shave those last two digits on your payment. And then you walk out going, oh, I got out of here with $2,000 off the price I was going to pay 200 miles away right near my house. So I got a deal because my monthly payment is now $5 less than it would have been if I bought it closer to my house. So I remember having that conversation with my dad saying, I am not going to buy a car from South Jersey simply because you know the dealer. And I'm going to save $5 on my monthly payment for 84 months. I'm just going to buy it near my house. And this way I could always talk to the guy and make an appointment, drop it off, walk to Walmart, then go home. It's like, okay, fair enough. And then he was really hammering me with this. Go to my friend, the dealer, and that's how I shut him down.
Wait, you don't want to shop at Walmart. They murder babies.
Yeah. I heard about that. But you know what? What I need isn't in that aisle, so I never go down that aisle.
Okay, okay.
You got me going.
All that.
This is Jimmy's rant.
from the Ghia thing, it's just one of those things that, you know, is gonna it elicits a different kind of response from a lot of people who watch our videos. And it's good and bad, and, you know, kind of like it always makes me think and makes me question stuff for a little bit. And for the first day or so, if I
Bob, I have an idea,
like, and then after a day or so, then I kind of get back to remembering where those comments and those opinions fit within mine, and I kind of can set them aside and be like, okay, yeah, cool. I'm going to go back to doing what I was doing.
I have an idea, and everybody could use this. The pinned comment, which typically kind of shows if you're not really making a full screen, you could say comments for this video have been turned off, and pin that comment, and the casual annoying people will see that and just brush past the video. But the people that know and like and are interested will know that that's a joke, and then they'll comment anyway, and it'll most likely filter out all the negative comments.
That's a crazy life hack.
Yeah, there you go. You guys could try.
It'll also cut down your engagement, which will kill the video.
I just invented that. No, it'll engage only the people that know, that listen here.
You know what I legitimately wish, though, is that you could go to the YouTube Studio and actually turn off comments, that they can't be there, but turn off your view of comments. I legitimately would like to not be able to see them, so that I could focus on looking at the analytics. I always get distracted. If they're down there, I'm like, oh, what do people think? You know, and then I go read the thing and I'm like, oh, that's what they think. Cool. But it'd be nice if I could just hide that and just look at how it's performing and decide whether I need to make changes based on, you know, views rather than the input. But
I know Van Nystat doesn't read any YouTube comments. He'll say this. He only reads the comments on his Patreon. And I believe him when he says that, and he never responds. He never likes anything. And I can't even imagine not looking at comments, because I'm so curious on people's reaction to what I'm doing. Also, if there is an obvious error in the video, you know, you're going to see that right away. Like, somebody will point it out. But I really enjoy the reaction, and it's mostly positive. Or some people have some amazing ideas that I never would have thought of, and it's like, oh man, I wish I would have thought of that. So I can't imagine not reading
the
comments.
I personally, of course, like the engagement. This last video, and I told you guys here, I was like, I'm making this thing, I'm gonna CNC the drawers just so I can get it done. Hold on, this might be my delivery, so let me talk to this guy. Hold on, I'm going to pause myself.
Okay, well, while he's doing that, I actually had another... So the thing that I'm working on right now, and I told you about it, David, before we started recording, it's a secret in the video. So I had... It's funny because I've had so many big ideas that take a long time that... It's been difficult, even at my slower pace over the last year or so, it's been difficult to get the videos done in time. And a lot of times we have a slip a week and stuff like that. It's not a big deal. But I've been kind of running out of quick little ideas. But this, over the weekend, I had this little idea for a thing that I've gotten the entire video done in 2 days. Had all the material there, just kind of like made it up as I went. No design, no modeling, no sketches, anything. So I've got the whole thing done in 2 days, and it's like a fun little cool idea that probably would not get enough views or get attention if I said what it was. But there's some cool little details in it. So I decided to make the video like a mystery, So at the beginning, I don't tell people what I'm making. I tell them what it's being made out of. And the whole thing is like, see if you can figure this out along the way. So we're just going to start doing some woodwork and see if you can figure out what I'm making as we go through. And then I'll show you at the end. So it'll be interesting to see if we can figure out a way to get that idea across in the title and thumbnail so people know kind of what they're in for. But I'm trying something different because there are a lot of projects that I know, if you just say what it is, it's not going to be interesting enough for enough people to click on, but the outcome of it, I think, is worthwhile. People just, you know, may not get that far. So kind of trying a way to get people in just to see if they can, you know, but one of the interesting things about it was that I just came up with the idea quickly. It's something I personally will use and something I've kind of wanted for a while. And the design and the execution of it all happened really quickly in just a couple of days. And it's been a long time since I've had one of those, like, I've got an idea, let's go do it. And then you just do it and it's done. And like, there's the quick thing. Normally it's like, I got to like order some material and I got to plan ahead and I got to make sure that I have the right caster and the right this and the right that and move things around to be able to make it, whatever. So it's been a like a fast kind of interesting couple of days of just like, you know, getting something knocked out. But
you've been filming it by yourself or somebody there with you?
Oh, filming it by myself, yeah. Using my camera stand, which is awesome. It's so awesome. Being able to just like one hand lift it up and down. Like I don't even use the lock. I haven't locked
it. Just stays right where it's at.
Yeah. And just being able to move it around very quickly has been cool. And I've definitely identified a few things with that camera stand that can be improved. And I'm trying to come up with more things that can be improved so I can actually do another version of it. But it's been good.
What was I talking about?
I don't know.
Anybody remember what I was talking about? I have no idea.
Comment below.
I was in the middle of making a point, but my sawmill from Log Soul is coming today, and that was the truck driver just making an appointment to come to the place. So that'll be in a couple hours. But I forgot what I was on. Whatever. Next podcast.
I'm getting something new tomorrow as well that's not as interesting, but I'm really, really excited about it. We're finally getting fiber internet in our neighborhood.
Yeah.
Finally. So my speeds are going to, I don't know, maybe be 5 times faster than they are now at $40 less a month. So I'm pretty stoked about that.
Yeah, in the last year, we've gotten it. And oh my goodness, the upload speed is just phenomenal. Instead of taking 6 hours to upload a video, it takes 10 minutes. And it's so nice, especially when you have that last second, like, crap, I spelled something wrong on the screen. Now I got to re-upload this thing. It's a quick fix instead of an all day thing. It's so nice.
Yeah. I moved, when we sold the building, I moved the server and all of the stuff here. And so Forby and the guy that's doing some editing for us, they both are pulling footage from my house over the internet, but my 2 megabit upload or whatever it is terrible, so it makes their job slower.
One of the things that I want to do is I have an internal in the house backup, so everything gets backed up to the Synology drive, but then that is all within the house, so if there was a disaster, everything would be lost. So there are important things that get put on physical drives and taken elsewhere. What I want to do is get a second Synology drive, have that over at the rental house, and both houses have fiber, and it should back up seamlessly. But it's another, like, I got to spend $800 on a thing that's not fun. There's no pleasure in purchasing this thing at all, and so I keep putting it off.
Well, there's no pleasure there, but imagine the pain of losing.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. It's worth $800 to do it. Because we have one. We have another Synology at Forby's house, and it does the same kind of thing. So it's absolutely worthwhile.
Yeah.
Cool. Any other, let's see if I have any other things written down. Anything else going on? We don't really have a topic today, but oh, I'll give you a, I got a Land Cruiser update for the after show.
Oh, all right.
Oh boy.
Oh boy.
Oh no.
Oh boy.
Oh no.
Oh no.
It's not, right. It's like a, can you spell that? Yeah. The title.
Yeah.
E-E-H-H.
Well, it's been about 50 minutes since I thanked our Patreon supporters. Have you all figured out anything to recommend for this
week? Do it again.
I got something.
Okay. I do not. So go, quick.
So go. There is a woodworking channel called Johnny Trumbocus Woodworks. Yes.
JT. I know Johnny. He's from New York.
He does a lot of the Kumiko stuff.
Yes.
And in a video a few months ago, I mentioned I want to get into it. He reached out to me and said, "Hey, I sell these kits. Let's work together." And so I have his jigs, and I'm dipping my toes in this. And I want to recommend his channel because I have an upcoming video where I do the Kumiko stuff. I haven't quite figured out the final project that right now I'm just trying to get used to the technique. And I'm thinking about making a picture frame with the Kumiko grid around the picture that somehow incorporates into the picture. So maybe the picture is more of like a graphic design thing that I do. So that's what I'm working on now, and I want to recommend his channel because he's a great teacher of the stuff and does some pretty creative stuff with the Kumiko technique.
A funny story about Johnny was, I did a Filson demo 8-9 years ago at the Filson store that used to be right near my old apartment. And I was trying to get creative with like a mobile bandsaw, so I got a Rikon 10-inch or something smaller, like you could put on a stand and carry it around. And it was so underpowered, and I was so annoyed with it. At the end of the demo, I was like, "Who wants this?" And Johnny's like, "I'll take it." So I gave Johnny my bandsaw at the end of the demo that was like 2 days old. And besides that, I think he just got married. So congratulations, Johnny.
Oh, congrats on that.
I'll recommend the Legal Eagle again, because I got to meet Devin the other day. He came to my studio and I finally gave him the giant gavel, which I posted on Instagram. We went back and forth on a couple of stories. And what a sweet guy. He's such a smart, sweet guy. We talk politics behind the scenes for a couple of minutes. He lives in DC. He's very, 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 very intelligent and smart, and he's a lawyer, and he's handsome and charismatic, and he's a real movie star. He's a good dude, and he's fans of all three of ours. And do you guys remember when we did it was like a real big deal for us at the time when we did our Q&A at Maker Faire in San Francisco?
Oh yeah,
he was in the audience then.
Oh,
he was in the audience that day. I don't know if I ever told you guys that. Yeah, he told me that. So check him out. And then also, I have a little, probably it's only going to be on my Patreon, is a conversation with Keith Rucker, who came to visit me yesterday. He restored the big giant bandsaw. So Keith and Clark Easterling from Windy Hill Foundry came to visit me. They're on a Northeast road trip visiting all types of fun people that make stuff. And those guys are sort of in the machinist community. And I'm in lots of communities. I'm in the maker community, the machinist community, and I can't think of any more right now, but I'm in a couple
different but lots of them.
Yeah, a couple I can't say until the after show.
Oh.
So check those guys out. Check out Keith Rucker's channel. He restored the bandsaw in 50 different episodes. We talked a little bit about, he worked on the Tally Ho. You guys know the world famous Tally Ho, the boat restoration that Leo Sampson's doing? You guys know the Tally Ho?
No.
Bob, come on, Bob. Oh my God, you guys got to check out
Dave. Dave.
Come on, guys, come on. The Tally Ho is a boat that Leo Sampson started to restore in 2017. Because that was the first message he sent to me. He's like, "Hey, I'm going to restore this boat if you could help promote the channel for me." So I did. And he built it's like a 100-foot sailboat. I don't know how long it is. It's probably 70 feet, 60 feet. He bought it for $1, a sailboat that was built in 1890 or something. And he restored it back to perfection. And Keith did a lot of the cast stuff, and so did Clark. They did some of the work on the boat. He enlisted lots of different people in the community. So check out. I just recommend like 8 channels. So check out the Tally-ho.
Check out YouTube. It's a site where you can find a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. I have 2. Oh. And they were both randomly just shown to me. One is the story of Keith Jarrett's Cologne concert. I had never heard of Keith Jarrett before. Keith Jarrett is a jazz pianist. And this video is by a guy named David Hartley. Never heard of him before either. It just showed up, and the video is called How a Total Disaster Became the World's Best-Selling Piano Album. Hmm. And it's a pretty fascinating little story about this jazz pianist who was supposed to play in Cologne, Germany at like 11:30 at night in an opera house. And everything that went wrong to him getting there. And then he played a concert on a broken piano. Bless you. He played a concert on a broken piano that could never be played anywhere else because it used the broken piano in the music. He played it one time, and then that live album became the best-selling piano album of all time.
Whoa, that's cool.
It's pretty cool. It's a neat little... I mean, it's not like super dramatic or anything, but it, as a musician, listening to the arc of the little story, you're like, whoa, that's pretty wild. Anyway, so there's that. And then, remember last week I was talking about, you know, the... Is it too late for me to learn how to do this and to do that and to that type of thing? Well, like the next day, this video from Rick Beato. Do you know who Rick Beato is?
The music guy. It's a great channel. Music guy.
So he put out a video called It's Never Too Late If You're Willing to Do the Work. And he goes through his career and talks about when in his career he started doing all these different things and how he got to where he is, and all along the way making the point that it doesn't matter when you start these things. It doesn't matter how old you are. If you're willing to put in the work at any given time, you can actually like catch up and you can get the things accomplished. And it was a cool like reminder right after I had talked about that. So I don't know. It's a pretty good little video. It's like 6 or 7 minutes long.
Nice.
Yeah, that's what I got. You guys got anything else for this week?
One last thing. I want to use the audience. If anybody is looking for a 1967 Chevrolet Impala for $12,000 and wants to bring a trailer to Toledo, hit me up.
Bring a trailer.
Bring a trailer.
.com.
Have you thought about putting it on bringatrailer.com?
Yes. The thing is, I got to take it out and take photos. That's a barrier. I've been wanting to, I made the decision to sell it.
All right, Mr. Photographer.
I know, right? I made the decision to sell it a few months ago, and I just have to go do the thing. But there's so many things that I want to do instead.
Yeah. If you are going to take pictures of it, though, you should do that before the seasons start to change, because as it gets cold outside, it's going to be even harder for you to justify, you know.
One of the things that I want to do is go to the park when the colors are perfect and do a full-on photo shoot.
That'd be cool. It'd be cool to have those pictures.
Yeah.
To have them, yeah.
But again, it's another one of those things. I'm waiting for the conditions to be perfect before I do the thing.
Yeah.
Just do it.
That's what Photoshop's for.
Right.
Cool. Well, I guess that's it. And yeah, next week we'll be back to normal, up-to-date videos, even though that's 2 weeks from now for us. Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you.
Catch you next time.
Thank you. Love you.